Welcome to this edition of the Pesky Report presented by Beyond the Monster. Similar to Masataka Yoshida, we had about a week hiatus of the MLB show. So we're back this Sunday afternoon pregame stream. So it'll be kind of like a mini recap of what's to come or what's happened, and then a little preview of what might happen tonight on Sunday Night Baseball between the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago Cubs. I'm Jordan, joined by Sam, joined by Brian. How are you two doing tonight? Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah, same here.
All right, awesome. Glad to hear it. So it's been kind of a tale of two games so far for the Boston Red Sox in this series with the Chicago Cubs. Get absolutely smacked in the face repeatedly, down for the count on Friday night, and then completely turn it on its ear on Saturday in a bullpen game, 17-0 in honor of the New England Patriots having an unbelievable draft. They put up a football score and blanked the Chicago Cubs. I'll start with you, Sam. What are some of your takeaways from the first couple games of this series?
Just how hot and cold it kind of has been. Like the first game was like, it kind of felt like we were totally dominated. Like I really just watching a Monica pitch is like, I really wish we had been able to get him. And then going to the second game and it's just the exact opposite, and it was like at no point in doubt 17-0. I mean, it really was just a tale of two stories to this point. I'm very excited to see how this last game goes.
And Brian, you were at the game Friday, right? So you got to watch the shellacking. That must have been fun for you.
Yeah, it was great. You know, you show up and it's all blue, and you know, we're like, are we playing the that's the Cubs. Those are Cubs fans. Everybody. So the section I sit in, it's mostly season ticket holders. They don't go to games in April because they're all like 50, 60 year old retired. If it's below 50, they just don't show up. So we know it's going to be all Cubs fans. And they're like, how old is this place? Oh, is there a good restaurant around here? Like, it's all the stupid tourist question. I'm like, okay, you know. And then, you know, Sweet Caroline comes on. They all go bonkers. They think it's like the coolest thing. But yeah, I mean, on the radar gun, it didn't look like, you know, Imanaga was throwing, you know, that hard 92, 93, but he was throwing fastballs like belt high or higher, and the Red Sox could just not lay off them. O'Neill had the one home run, but other than that, it was like, why is this guy still in the game? And they did have runners on base for a lot. They had guys first and second or whatever, but then it would be Pablo Reyes is up or Bobby Belbuck would be up. And they just they had plenty of opportunities to score runs early. And then after Cutter came out of the game, and you know, our best friend, the left-hander, you know, the pitcher there, once he came in, we're like, oh, okay, you know, red flag, you know, there we go, we'll be all right. But yeah, it was kind of demoralizing after that. I never leave early, no matter if it's 22-0. I just stay the whole game, and it was, you know, it's kind of all right, let's get the hell out of here type of deal. But we stayed for the whole game. But then you're right, the next day it was two touchdowns and a field goal or whatever. I mean, it was crazy. And then the Celtics and the Bruins, it was basically like a complete 180 as far as just enthusiasm sports fan wise. So I'm glad that, you know, now who knows what's going to happen tonight. Now it'll probably be, you know, an extra inning game for all we know.
Yeah. And I'll throw the tonight's matchup on the screen real quick. We got Tanner Houck, who's been phenomenal, a little bit of a hiccup late in his start against Cleveland after he'd gone 15 straight shutout innings against them, or 15 and a third before giving up a run. He's 3-2 of the 1.65. Hayden Wesneski, who I think is going to be a very good pitcher, but he's only made two appearances this season. Both wins, but both in relief. This is his first start on Sunday Night Baseball at Fenway Park. So who knows how Wesneski will respond to that kind of pressure. I mean, Houck's pitched in the postseason, so I'm sure he could probably handle Sunday Night. He's pitched standalone games before, so I'm sure he could handle Sunday Night Baseball. It's just a matter of if the Cubs can handle Tanner Houck, and so far it's been difficult for people to do that. But yeah, back to the two games that we've seen so far. I'll be honest, did not watch the first one. I was fed up. I tweeted it. I was fed up with the Red Sox because, like I said at the top of this, like Masataka Yoshida, our MLB show basically took a week hiatus. The man was missing in action. Alex Cora a couple times was like, he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow. Then he wasn't. You know, some of the reasoning behind it makes sense. You know, he's the DH. If Devers or O'Neill, who are better hitters objectively, even at Masa's best, they'll DH in favor of him or over him. And I just don't think he's as bad in left field as, you know, we had to watch a lineup on Friday that consisted of a bottom four of the order. That was Pablo Reyes, Bobby Dalbec, and Manuel Valdez, and Seydon Rafaela. And we'll, when we talk more about the 17-0 shellacking couple of those guys will be seen in higher regard. But the combined OPS entering that game of those four guys was 418. So I said, fuck it, I'm not watching this shit. And I'm glad I didn't, even though I wanted to watch Imanaga pitch. I almost bought tickets to the game. I would have been very upset if I had to watch that bottom four. But yeah, very ugly. But moving into Saturday, so much more fun to watch and to consume as a Red Sox fan. Not so much for the Cubs, but hey, you got your version of it on Friday night. Hold on one sec. Sorry. So Winkowski started game two, and which is something that I thought was interesting. So he pitched, or not interesting that he started. We knew he was going to start. But I remember back on the home opener, he threw like 65 pitches in relief. I know he'd pitched a little bit more, one, two inning spots before getting put into the rotation with all the injuries. Had 52 yesterday. I thought he looked all right, especially in the third inning. I mean, he had that. He had to throw some extra pitches in the first because Emmanuel Valdez missed a ground ball that was hit at him. But I was kind of shocked to see him only go three. I thought they would have tried to push it for a fourth inning. Granted, the game was still close at the time. But it just goes to show the kind of confidence that they have in their bullpen that they were able to go two innings out of Bernardino, I think. No, it was one out of Bernardino and then two out of Slayton. And by the time Slayton went out for his second inning, that thing was over, which was really nice. What was something from yesterday's game that really impressed you? I'll start with you, Brian. Like I said, Dahlbeck and Rafaela were definitely more positively involved in this one. But yeah, what were some of your positive takeaways?
Yeah, you had the number nine hitter from the previous night have what do you have, seven RBIs yesterday, and now he leads the team. So that was kind of nice. It's, you know, in the Friday game, there was a couple of times where he was swinging at those pitches that you can triple A, you can do, and they'd be hits where they're like a pop fly to like the second baseman or the shortstop, which would have scored a run. And then the following day, it's just like, okay, let it rip. And I remember Friday, you know, I'm at the game and they say, oh, you know, just sign an 8-year deal or whatever. And my dad's like, That guy's getting an 8-year contract because he's looking at the batting average. Like, he, you know, I'm like, yeah, but you know, he's really good in the minors and he can play shortstop. He's like, 8 years. I'm like, yeah, 8 years. He's like, okay. And then the next game, you know, after the 7 RBIs, he sends me a text. Yeah, that guy's pretty good. They should keep him around. And I'm like, yeah, no shit. But I think Bobby Dahlbeck had 3 RBIs. Both teams had position players, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of out of hand at that point. O'Neill had his first home run that wasn't a solo, which was pretty cool. And then it was also a combined shutout, too. So it was like watching a high school game where it was like everybody kind of chipped in. I mean, how many games have we seen in the past, those bullpen games where it's, well, all right, here we go, 5-0 in the third inning, and they just kind of, we got to save the team. But every guy that came out of that bullpen did really, really well. It was also a short game. For the amount of runs they scored, it was only 2 hours and 30 minutes, which I thought was crazy. So there was a lot of – they scored in bunches, and then after that, when the Red Sox were pitching, there was basically shut down, which was nice to see.
Yeah, for sure. They took care of business yesterday, and it was a much-needed victory. I mean, this whole – like, they've been very good on the road. Like, plain and simple, they've been a very good road team. I know they lost the series to Cleveland. But oh man, I'm blanking on their record on the road. But regardless, entering play yesterday, they were what, 4-7 at home? Or no, 3-8 at home. Sorry. 3-8 at home. And like at some point, something's gotta give. You either are a horrible team and you just lose, or you take care of business and you defend your home turf. And the Red Sox, I mean, the jury's still out tonight. We'll see if they can win their first home series of the year. But it was nice to see them show a little bit of fight. You know, again, after Friday, like that was the kind of game that just sucks the wind out of your sails for an entire homestand. You come out of this, you're 2-4 on the homestand. I know the Giants are worse team than the Cubs. Cubs are one of the best teams in baseball so far. Maybe you can win the series against the Giants, but I want them to have a good homestand, obviously. Like the big thing, and I looked at some of their records over the past few years. I mean, in 2021, they really defended home very well. In 2018, obviously, they would beat you to shreds no matter where you played. You could have played in a friggin', I don't even know, in a tin can, and they would have found a way to score 40 off you. That team was stacked. But these last few years, especially 2022 and 2023, they have been middle of the pack on the road and just a train wreck at home. So to have a win in as authoritative a fashion as they did yesterday really went a long way towards inspiring confidence for me personally. I'm sure a lot of other people in the fan base, and then hopefully for themselves as well. They also have to, you know, come into play tonight and put up a good performance, because you lay down flat. It'll be similar to it'd be like an early version of the 2019 series with the Yankees, where they almost swept them in the Red Sox are back series, and then they laid an egg on Sunday Night Baseball and tailspun after that. Sam, what were your thoughts yesterday?
My main takeaway was kind of inverse of something you said earlier about being surprised that Winkowski only went 3 with the state of the bullpen. I kind of interpret it more as Hauk has been one of the guys who goes deepest in the innings or deepest in the games for you, which is kind of a crazy thing to say after the past few years of seeing him pitch, but he really has. I mean, he's the only one that's gone into the 8th, I believe. He really consistently has gotten you 6+ innings, and just that thought alone is crazy, just unthinkable prior to the hiring of Andrew Bailey.
Yeah, his worst start from a length standpoint is 5 2/3, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been his best in the past 2 years.
Seriously, it might have been. I think he's the only one that's pitched in the 7th. I can't think of another starter going into the 7th.
I feel fairly certain that maybe Whitlock or... I don't think Bayo has, but I definitely think someone has pitched into the 7th, but I definitely know that he's the only one that's pitching the 8th.
Yeah, I was very fortunate enough to be at that game that Hauk pitched against Cleveland. That was – I was doing the math with my dad. I'm like, I spent more than $1 per minute of this game. It was, $115, $120 bucks for the tickets, and it was 109 minutes. Was the game. It was crazy. And you know, if the Red Sox had lost that would have been horrible, but obviously Tanner Houck was brilliant and hopefully can continue that trend tonight, especially after a bullpen game. Now, he doesn't have to go super deep. He doesn't have to pitch into the 7th inning. Obviously they'll take it if they can get it, but you know, they didn't use Martin yesterday. They didn't use Jansen yesterday. They didn't use the guy that they just called up because Joely Rodriguez, your best friend, the red flag that you called out for Friday, Joely Rodriguez been DFA'd. If Hauk can get them into the 6th inning tonight, or at least get them through 5 pretty comfortably, I feel pretty good about their chances tonight. Again, I like Wes Neske. I don't know how he'll respond to that first game under the lights, first start of the year at Fenway on national TV, you know. We often like to talk about these players as if they're robots, but that's the kind of pressure that I don't think he's felt as a major leaguer. I don't think he ever pitched for the Yankees. I know he got traded for Scott Efros a couple years ago. So he's never really pitched in this kind of environment before. So be curious to see how he does. The Red Sox did make a trade this week with the team they're playing tonight, though. They got Garrett Cooper, who was DFA'd a week or so ago, 6-7 days ago, for cash considerations. So the move to get him onto the 40-man roster was sadly Tristan Casas hitting the 60-day injured list. So we will not see him until at least the end of June. I think we all kind of expected that to be the best case scenario if he was back that soon. I am curious though, and I'll start with you, Sam, who you think. I mean, Grissom will be back the same time, so I guess you can give both players you think will be taken off the major league roster for those two guys. Because, I mean, I don't think there's really a wrong answer, but, you know.
I feel like the right answer is David Hamilton for Grissom and Dalbec for Cooper. I know that we're a little shy on right-handed hitting depth, but is he right-handed hitting depth? Is he hitting depth at all? I don't know if he could be qualified as that. I really, other than maybe swapping out Valdez for Hamilton, I really don't know what else they could do. It feels like pretty cut and dry relatively, especially in comparison to some of the future moves like adding Casas back. I really don't know what's going to happen with that. But this one feels like I would kind of be surprised if it's not either Hamilton, Valdez, and Dalbec.
What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sam, pretty much had the same answer I would. I mean, that's what I would go with as far as personnel, and I think that's what people wanted to do. And I think it's nice that the Red Sox actually made a move because I think half the year we're like, you know, in spring training, we're like, this team doesn't give a shit. And I mean, yeah, you bring in a guy who's making $1 million, whatever. But okay, they did something. So maybe they care now. Maybe they're like, oh, wow, geez, you know, all right, you know, we kind of have a halfway decent team here. You know, their pitching has been lights out. Right now it's been their offense. And oh, wow, all of a sudden O'Neill's healthy and Massa's in the lineup and Devers is playing third and they score a bunch of runs. It's like, you know, I think you're going to be a wild card contender if you guys are healthy. The pitching is going to come back to earth at some point. You're not going to – I hate to break anybody's bubble. You're not going to have the best pitching in baseball the whole year. Your ERA in an American League team in the East is not going to be under 3. It's just not going to happen. If you think so, just, you know, just give up now. But, I mean, if you can get it under 3.5 at Fenway, you're going to score at least 4 runs with that lineup. You should. Plus all these other guys like Wong, who's hitting out of his mind right now. Grissom had 4 hits, I think, today for Worcester. It's going to come together. I mean, it was a real, you know, losing the story's defense. It sure was huge. Casas, I don't think he's going to be out. I think you're going to see him probably in June at some point. I don't think he's going to be gone for the year. So then you don't have to give up a prospect for a decent hitting first baseman. Oh, wait, he's probably one of the best hitters you're going to have on the team. You know, like you're going to have the pieces there to do something. And it's just really nice to see that finally this team is, you know, they're getting healthier, but you still have some lingering injuries. But, you know, like you said, that lineup when it's like 6, 7, 8, 9, you just kind of you're at a game and it's just depressing because you're like, OK, we can't score any runs here. And if they can alleviate those concerns, they'll be fine. And with the adjustments they did on the pitching, it's going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, and looking at the lineup tonight, it's the same as it was yesterday. Massa's in there at DH, Devers at third. O'Neill in left field. Valdez is in there. So to answer the question I posed before, it's a bit of an unpopular opinion. It's the minority opinion here within the three of us as well. But I think Valdez is going to go down for sure. I think he is definitely going to go down because they need him to get every day at bats. He is not hitting at the major league level right now. I know he's gotten some rotten luck. He's hit the ball hard a few times and it's not found grass, but he's not a good enough defensive second baseman to justify being in the lineup if he's not hitting. And unfortunately for him on the offensive side, it's a business and it's a results driven business. I think it's best for him to get every day at bats, especially against left-handers. So that way in the future, maybe he's not a platoon bat. Maybe he can, and maybe he's good enough to be in the lineup regardless of his defense. So I think he's going to go down. And the, I guess surprisingly, I thought a lot more people would have been on board with this. I think Pablo Reyes is gone. I really don't like, it almost felt weird to say that after yesterday, but I mean, he was like a late game substitution. Obviously he came in for Devers when it was like 4,000-0. And they pitched the 9th inning, which was just hilarious. And
he can pitch. I mean, you might want to keep him around, Jordan. I mean, that he's a double threat. You know I mean?
He
know?
Threw up the 0. Who needs Ohtani? You got Pablo Reyes. Yeah. Exactly. We got Pablo. I might play that thing Joey Capone tweeted a few weeks ago. We got Pablo. But it's just I did the numbers the last couple of weeks. As bad as Dahlbeck's been, he's actually been better than Pablo Reyes across the board from an average OBP and slugging standpoint. He's played very good defense at the corners. And like, God forbid something happens to Devers mid-game, do you really want to have to put Connor Wong in at third base? Because I don't really want to have both catchers in the lineup at the same time. Just because of the risk there, one of them gets hurt or both of them get hurt, and who the hell are you going to have catching? It's something that rarely happens, but I am horrified of the thought of having both catchers in the lineup. I think Pablo's the guy who goes. Dahlbeck offers some versatility. I think he's played really very good defense so far this season. At least the at-bats are starting to look better. The results are not. I mean, I shouldn't say the results are not. He had no batting average until a week ago. So I guess the results have gotten better for Bobby. But I do think it'll be Valdez and Pablo Reyes. And I tweeted this yesterday as well. This is going to be like, and I know in my hypothetical, Dahlbeck's still on the team, but this is going to be like when they went from Kike at short to Yu Chang. We're going from so bad to slightly above average, and it's going to look like you just added Barry Bonds to the lineup. It's like, you know, yes, Sam.
You unintentionally brought up something I never thought of, and I don't even know if Chorus thought of this. Prior to Casas going down, he was the emergency catcher. Who do you think would be the emergency catcher if like Wong and like McGuire were to get tossed or something like that? Because it's not going to be like Pablo Reyes or Devers.
Dahlbeck was the emergency catcher?
No, Casas was.
Oh, Casas is the emergency. That's interesting. Ooh. This is good. This is fun. I'm curious now.
I hate to put both of you on the spot.
Brian, you got an answer?
Probably Kelsey Jensen. I mean, that's what I'd go with, yeah.
Oh, Kenley Jansen. That would be...
He's all about team first, you know. He'll do anything for the team. You know, he's a real team player.
He'll do anything to not have to pitch with the inconsistent baseballs. I don't know. It's tough because you wouldn't put like Rafaela there because that's too horrifying to think about, both from a performance standpoint, and him getting hurt would be detrimental. Definitely not going to be Devers. It might be Bobby. Like, it actually might be Bobby.
Probably is. Because if he gets hurt, you don't care.
From an athleticism standpoint as well, I think he's probably the best suited to do it.
Get Tyler O'Neill for the arm.
Yeah, get Tyler O'Neill for the arm, although we want to keep him from getting hurt as well.
Put him in the bubble. Put him in the bubble.
Put him in bubble wrap. Yeah, I think it would probably be Bobby, but Kenley Jansen's a fun possibility as well, even though he's 37 and definitely not as nimble as he was back when he was a catcher. You have to sleep like a baby the night before.
Don't they have like a bunch of career, like minor league or quasi major league catchers now at Worcester? And supposedly that's why like they're pitching so much better now. They actually like gave a shit instead of getting these scrub guys that were all bad and couldn't hit at all. And the pitchers from Double A were like, well, all the catchers are awful, so that's why my ERA sucks. It's like, no, maybe you just suck. How about that? You know, but now they actually have guys. Yeah.
It is possible, but I mean, I cannot understate the importance of not having to throw a baseball to Jorge Alfaro. Like, I cannot state the importance of that enough.
Or Ronaldo Hernandez. God.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
When a guy who catches Jordan, his best quality is his hair, you know he's not a good catcher.
Dude looks like Jason.
All they did was talk about his hair. Like, oh, he's got great hair. He's a catcher. How about, like, can he throw the ball? Can he catch the ball? Can he hit the ball? No, he's got great hair. It's like, okay.
I was about to say he could throw the ball, but then there was that one play, I think it was against the Mets last year, where he chucked the ball into center field on a single, the throw home, the guy ran to second, and then he threw the ball like 900 feet away from somebody. And then
it was like a video game. It was like a mistake, like when you're playing PlayStation and the ball just kind of goes in a random direction. You have no idea why. No, they did it in real life. Real life, they did that.
They did that regularly last year.
So, like, people, the
fact that the Red Sox have been playing like somewhat fundamentally sound defense lately, and you can pinpoint exactly when it started, when they moved Rafael to shortstop full time, and you know, conveniently Bobby Dahlbeck was also playing third, I guess a little bit of first as well. But like, it's been nice to see the routine plays getting made, save for the Valdez screw up yesterday. But yeah, I don't even want to think about the possibility of anybody else but those two catching right now. And I definitely don't want to think about Jorge Alfaro catching. Let's get that out of here right now. Oh my gosh. Tyler Heineman's hurt too. So your third catcher for 5 minutes, who was apparently good enough to be a designated hitter over Masa Yoshida in the last week, is hurt as well. I think that was player number 15 that hit the shelf. Was Tyler Heineman, who I actually was begging to make the opening day roster over Reese McGuire because I'm just so smart. Anyway, moving on. As I've alluded to several times, Masataka Yoshida took a week off from baseball. A couple pinch hit opportunities mixed in there. Also had a 3-hit performance, which I think was a 2-hit performance. Then they changed the ruling of that fly ball to left to a double, like an inning later, and then 3 days after that, they changed it back to an error. So I don't really know if it was a 2 or 3-hitter performance in Pittsburgh. But yeah, he was back in the lineup yesterday, had 3 hits against actual major league pitching and a double off Matt Mervis. But, you know, this was around the time last year that Yoshida got going. Would love to see him add to, you know, his case to be in the lineup every day again tonight. I'm putting a call out now. He's homering tonight. This is just me being an absolute fanboy for Masa Yoshida. I got a feeling in my bad knee he's going yard tonight. That would be I just can't believe how little he was involved in the last week or so. Even those games with O'Neill and Devers DHing aside, like, I don't know if you guys agree, but do you think he's that bad in left field that he flat out can't play unless he's DHing every day? I'm not saying put him in left every day, but like, he can't play left field under any circumstance except if Reese McGuire gets thrown out in the 10th inning.
Well, I think that, I mean, look how important Devers is to the lineup. And I think if his knee is bothering him at all because of all the other injuries, they're being maybe too cautious. Like, they own the team and it's like their livelihood, instead of a bunch of people talking on a podcast, calling a bunch of, you know, dinks for not, you know, playing the guy who can, you know, get the job done. You know, like, their actually life depends on it. Like, their kids go to school locally, you know, and their wife, you know, like, you know, is trying, hey, you know, don't say anything stupid at work and make sure you do the right thing. So we got a good thing going. Oh, wait, you know, you screwed up. You put Devers in. Now he's out for the year. You know, it's kind of like, so I see that aspect of it. And I think it's because if there wasn't the other injuries, maybe they'd be a little different with it. And I mean, it's argued, you can't say that O'Neill is a superior defender or Abreu is a superior defender. Duran, I don't know. I mean, he can get to balls, but I mean, I love having Abreu and O'Neill in the corners. And I think, did you see some of the press conferences with Yoshida, where it was like, he's really careful with what he said. And I think that they're kind of like, listen, you know, Devers is our guy. We just gave him the biggest contract in the history of the organization. He's got to be healthy. And I think Cora kind of, and I think the team kind of likes having that DH role if they can plug injuries in. But at the same time, they're not going to put Yoshida out there. But it'd be the kind of thing you'd only see Yoshida in left field if it was like old school National League, American League, World Series games, like when they put like Ortiz at first base. And they've just, they're at least they're consistent about it. They're not wishy-washy. They're like, oh, we're not going to do that. Or we're not going to put Rafael at shortstop. And all of a sudden he's a shortstop. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm glad they caved on that decision because that was the smartest move to make. But if Devers isn't healthy, he's going to play DH. And don't be surprised if when Casas comes back, he'd probably DH too when, you know, as they ease him back into that role. And the problem is Yoshida is the guy that's going to suffer from that. But you saw yesterday, I mean, he is healthy. And last year he broke down, Jordan. That was the thing. I mean, he was hot from the beginning of the season in the All-Star break. He was like on fire. And then just all of a sudden, it seemed like every at-bat, a ground ball to second base, ground ball to second base. If they can prevent that and keep him sharp, I think it's a win-win. I mean, he might keep complaining about it, might want to play more, and fans, we want to see him in the lineup. But if he can hit in August and September, that's huge for this team.
That's fair. Sam, what do you think?
I think it's kind of confounding to keep him out of the lineup for as long as they did. Even if you don't want him to get into the field, you want to have him DH only. I don't understand it, especially playing in Fenway Park for what was it, one of the two series that he missed? Like, it's left field at Fenway Park is not very difficult. We've had many, many terrible defenders play left field at Fenway Park for the entire year. I don't think his defense is worse than Manny Ramirez or a few of the guys who've been out there. It feels like something is missing there. I don't really buy that he's only a DH excuse. I feel like something happened. It feels like vaguely like the Verdugo things where he was late or something like that. And it's like, it feels something behind the scenes has not been said, that it's just five separate games where you felt like his bat was like that outweighed by his defense. I don't buy it. I feel like something else is there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And like, I don't know, like, they gave Rob Refsnyder reps at first base, both on his rehab assignment and in spring training. And now maybe they are just straight up not confident with Rob Refsnyder at first base. And he was mashing coming off the IL.
I did read his toe is still not 100% healthy.
But they're putting him in the outfield.
Well, so I guess the idea is, and I don't know if this is realistic, but what I read in the interviews was they think that by him playing first base, it's a lot easier to get stepped on. It's a lot easier for a ball to get on it. Outfield, because he's an outfielder by trade, maybe common sense, maybe muscle memory takes availability where, yeah, he could play first base. I mean, you could play first base in a softball game. You could do it. But he might put his foot somewhere or come in for a bunt and do something where he's trying to make the athletic play. And then if you lose him, it's kind of like, all right, he's not Devers. But I think that's the reason he's not at first base. I think if he didn't break his toe, then you'd see him at first base. And I hate to like bail them out. I hate to give the Red Sox management any credit for doing the right thing. But in this instance, I don't buy the excuse, but it's a believable excuse.
Yeah. Okay. I think I can understand that. That was something that was never mentioned on Twitter at all through all the discourse that I got into, and I got into plenty of it because I
think it was barking. I'll find it for you, but I'll send it to you later. But it was basically, I think it was Alex Cora, and they were talking about it, and he said, yeah, his toe isn't 100% healed. He's like, he can play, but the kind of thing where it's like, you know, when you break a bone, you got the hairline fracture, and then they get the, it fills in. And they said if a direct impact could cause it to break again. So that's what I read. Yeah.
Okay, so that at least makes sense, because I was thinking along the lines of just a running standpoint with protecting his toe, and like he was playing every single day, and he was playing the outfield. So it just didn't, like, I wasn't putting two and two together there that it's a more of a quite literal physical issue rather than like an ability thing. Like it's not that they don't think he can play first base, it's that he physically cannot at the moment. And if it's that simple, then, you know, I apologize to Mr. Alex Cora for knowing more information than I do. You know, forgive me, I'm just a shit poster. But yeah, I just couldn't stand looking at the lineup every night and knowing that three quarters of the bottom four were automatic outs and Yoshida's just sitting on the bench. And yeah, I mean, to Sam's point, like Manny was an all-world hitter, Hall of Fame caliber bat. So you can deal with his defense. Yoshida's not that kind of hitter, but he's a better left fielder. Hanley Ramirez was the worst left fielder I've ever seen at any level in baseball. Like Little League, probably better left fielders than Hanley Ramirez. Andrew Benintendi was also a very bad left fielder that got bailed out. His noodle arm got bailed out by throwing 80 feet to home plate from left field. So I don't know. I really can't buy. And like Cora said the other day, well, Yoshida is going to get the majority of his at-bats at DH. He echoed that sentiment from spring training. And I'm like, well, he's played at the time. He'd played 20 games or 19 games. He was the DH in all 19 minus one inning after Reese McGuire got thrown out against Baltimore. Is that not majority? Like, is one game in left field suddenly 50-50? Like, what is this boy math we're doing here? Like, what are we doing?
The year before he joined the team when he was in Japan, he played 60% of the games at DH and 40% in the outfield too. So I don't think this is something new for him either. And I think if you looked at his stats, it was like, wow, he's an amazing hitter. And they're like, and they noticed it was like the opposite of when JD Martinez played the outfield, he put up big numbers, but he would always get hurt tripping over second base or doing something stupid. But when you put him at DH to save his career and his livelihood or whatever, he would hit like 280. But when you play like the outfield, he hit like 450 and his slugging would be 700. But like, but we can't put you in the outfield. You can't walk to the grass without falling and tripping over yourself. He's like, yo, but I really want to play. It's like, ugh. And also it's kind of one of those things where I'm sure Yoshida, like mentally, he's like, yeah, when I play the outfield, like I feel better. I want to play. Well, not if you can't do it, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, I remember JD. I don't remember if it was before he signed with the Red Sox or after 2018. He was talked to about the idea of playing DH, and he was like, I'm cool with DHing, but, you know, playing the outfield, because he talked about how he would DH sometimes for the Tigers. He was like, playing the outfield keeps me loose all game. Uh-huh. You know, you tighten up waiting for your next turn, and you can only do so much T work before you drive yourself insane. Yep. And that's crazy to hear JD Martinez say that. You'd think he does T work while he's sleeping, but like again, I still think Yoshida can handle. If you could get away with Yoshida playing two home games on a home or playing two games on a homestand in left field, like you can handle that. Especially on Friday night, I know Imanaga is nasty and it's a lefty against a lefty, but he's the only dude on your team that's ever faced him before, and he was apparently I have not confirmed this because I could not find the stats, but multiple people said that he was 6-for-11 against him in the NPB. So you have the guy with six, not only experience against the guy, but success against the guy. It just didn't make sense to me to keep him out of the lineup on Friday night, especially after he was going to be in the lineup the final game in Cleveland and then wasn't because Devers was DHing again. But regardless, that's neither here nor there. He is back and I am very happy. And again, predicting that he's going to homer tonight. I'm not going to get all specific and say when, because I'm already going to be wrong. I don't want to be even more wrong, but I feel good about him right now. He looked good yesterday, hit the ball hard. So we'll move into, unless you guys have anything else about the Red Sox, we'll go into some MLB stuff, and then we'll finish with like a quick maybe prediction about what we think's going to happen tonight. But let's talk about the best player in Toronto Blue Jays history making a return to Toronto over the weekend. Shohei Ohtani, greatest Toronto Blue Jay ever, even though he was only there for maybe 4 hours in the figment of our imaginations, thanks to JP Morosi.
He was at the airport, right? Or did he ever land, or was he always in the air?
I don't think he was ever the there. I don't think he was ever in Toronto during the offseason. Like, I think that was an old video or something, or he just wasn't in Toronto where that video was taken. JP Morosi ruined Toronto fans' lives.
The whole thing was that they were tracking the flight, and the flight just wasn't him.
Oh my gosh. JP Morosi, though, to his credit, like, he just completely acted like that never happened. He's just moved on.
I saw a couple of my Blue Jays like mutuals on Twitter saying like they got DMs from him either apologizing or like getting upset at like something they had tweeted. Like, in Blue Jay world, he definitely did not just move on.
Oh man. I mean, how could you? Like, seriously, like, that is the biggest story of the offseason. You're like, yep, he's going to Toronto. Nope. He's a Dodger. Welcome to Dodgerland. And he let every Blue Jays fan know after getting booed, because it's Shohei's fault JP Morosi did bad reporting. He hit a ball into the shadow realm. I think it was he hit the home run off Matt Barnes earlier in the week. That was like 119.2 miles an hour. And then his home run in Toronto was even harder because he's superhuman. That was an absolute moonshot. That man is so impressive. And people said that he wouldn't be an MVP candidate this year because he's not pitching. He's like third in the National League in WAR right now for position players. And all he does is hit. Oh my God. That is unfair that he is a Los Angeles Dodger.
But Jordan, you know, baseball writers, they're like, oh, he doesn't play the field. He's not getting a vote. It's like, you know, when Pedro was pitching and they're like, well, he's a pitcher. Was it George King? I'm not giving him a 15th place vote. There's 14 guys better than Pedro Martinez this year. There's still too many fossils that are hanging on in print media that have votes, and they're just going to be hardos, and they're not going to give it to him. Watch, he's going to lose it by like, it's going to be close, but like a guy like Betts will probably get it because, oh, he plays the field, and now he's playing. You know, it's okay, whatever. You know, and don't get me wrong, Betts is great and all, but I think Ohtani, people are getting up across the world to watch him, where, you know, I think the Dodgers fans even know that Betts is on the Dodgers. Is it like the Miami Heat when you go to the beach and you're like, oh, Shaquille O'Neal still plays for us? Like, I've been to California. Like, they are not, it's bad. It's real bad, you know? So,
oh man, they may not even know Shohei's there.
They don't. They've heard of him. Well, so they wear the Nomo jerseys and they get confused. Like, what happened to Nomo? Where is he?
Oh gosh.
You know?
Oh no.
Yeah. You know. It's they're like, who's our coach now? Lasorda? No, okay. What's going on? You know, they don't. They don't know.
It's the first game I've been to on time in 30 years, and so many things are different.
Oh yeah. Have you been there, Jordan? You can't, if you get a ticket, Wrigley's the same way. So if you get like a really nice ticket, like behind home plate or first base, you cannot go in the outfield seats.
Interesting.
So like Fenway was like that, like in the 80s. You had to like, hey, I need to cut through this exit to get my brother a wheelchair. Is that cool? And they'd be like, yeah, go ahead, kid. You know, whatever. And you'd walk around and you'd get better seats, you know, way back in the day. But I went to Wrigley 4 or 5 years ago and I got seats behind first base. And I'm like, hey, I want to go see the mechanical scoreboard. Like, no. When you go to go see a Dodgers game in Chavez Ravine, if you get like really good, you overpaid on StubHub or whatever, like $200 for like a really good seat, you can't go in the outfield seats. They're like, no, you can't go in there. So it's dumb. Stupid.
So you already have my money.
Yeah.
I'd get it if it was the other way around.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, if I had a shitty seat and wanted to sit like in a good seat, they'd be like, listen, no, I don't think so. It's like when you go to Yankee Stadium, all those seats behind home plate are empty because people just don't go. But they're padded, though, but nobody sits in them.
Man, what I would do for padded seat at Fenway Park, oh, my God. It's bad enough I have to sit like this.
You know how many people, Jordan? I'm right under the overhang in first base, and the Cubs fans, I give them a lot of credit. They're in their walkers, their canes, their wooden legs, you know. I mean, they were there when they won the World Series, you know, way back before everybody was born. But they're hobbling up in section 11, right? You know, and they're hobbling and they're hobbling. And then they go, I got to sit in a wood seat. You got to be shitting me. I'm like, sorry, buddy. It's just, you know, that's where it is. You know, like, where is row BB or whatever? I'm like, up there. And then they find out that they can't get beer because the vendor's like, buddy, I can't go up there. I can't go up there. Like, if you sit in this seat, though, I'll give you the beer. So they squat and they give them the beer and then they take the money or, you know, it's 2024. So now they hit the buttons on the device and the guy goes, how much do you want to tip me? So you don't want to feel like an asshole. You're like, I guess 20%, I guess. I don't know. You know, with the first season, they were saying, the machine's broken. No, I only take cash now. But now they're forcing on the debit cards now, big time. So,
yeah, the vendors are the only people that take cash now. If you go to a concession stand, you have to pay with a card.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I thought if they weren't going to do that during COVID, they were never going to do that. Like Chase Field was one of the first fields that was like vendors, no cash, concession stand, no cash. Once COVID happened, it was like all Apple Pay and debit cards. No cash was changing hands, but yeah, the Fenway experience where you have to be very uncomfortable. You have to sit sideways to watch the game. If you're down the lines, I would love to see if they would ever renovate the seating again. I doubt it, but
please. Well, why don't they add 5,000 seats like they did at TD Garden? So you got to be basically like a pole to like have a good time there. I have more room at Fenway in a 100-year-old park than I do watching a Celtics game. It's awful. The only place you can watch a Celtics game and be comfortable, Bruins for that matter, or a concert, is if you're in like a luxury box or like that, what do they call it, the 10th level now or whatever the hell. Basically, they figured out they could squeeze more money out of people by sitting a mile away. Like way, way up. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jeremy Jacobs, great owner there. Yeah, my buddy. Yeah.
I'll confirm that on Wednesday. I'm going to go to game 5. Probably going to watch them lose again because they hate winning when I go. But anyway, this is a baseball podcast. We'll get back to this. Anything else on Ohtani in his return to Toronto, which may not have been a return. It was more of an arrival.
Do you know where they sell outs at all or guys?
Probably. No. I would imagine so.
Okay. Yeah. I know attendance at Fenway, they have the announced attendance and then, you know, it's kind of like whatever, like 31,000 on Friday night. I don't know what it was the night after for the day game, but.
I have a weird thing. So on the opposing team for the Blue Jays is Justin Turner. The Red Sox are still paying Justin Turner three times what Ohtani is being paid for the CBT this year. We'll never get over how absurd that contract is, how absurd the deferment is. Everything about that is so crazy. I what an absurd circumstance.
It's like $680 million the second, like he has a 12-year deal and then it's the next 12 he makes $680, right? That's ridiculous.
It's the smartest thing, Jordan, because by the time he gets the money, he won't be a California resident. So he's going to save so much money because California, they do what we do in Massachusetts. They do the millionaire's tax, and then they do an entertainer's tax. So by him waiting, and then he'll probably, like, I don't know, buy a house in the Cayman Islands or Andorra or someplace where there's no income tax at all, and then he gets to keep all of it, all of it. It's from a money standpoint, it's the smartest thing you can do because you figure 20 years from now or whatever. I mean, he'll make like, oh, that was the guy who pitched and hit in Major League Baseball, but he's not going to earn what he does now, you know, when he's not playing. So it's a genius move because he probably makes more than that in endorsements now. I guarantee he does.
He certainly makes more than $2 million a year in endorsements. Like that's definitely true. He makes a bundle of money. I thought they were going to do it from an equity standpoint. They would defer it and then he would basically become owner of the Dodgers after he retired. Maybe. Whoever inherits the team in, you know, 15 years, are going to be pissed they're paying some dude $60 million a year to fucking sip juice out of a coconut, sip milk out of a coconut. It's going to be ridiculous. But so from the biggest superstar in probably the sports world, definitely in the baseball world, to a reliever on one of the worst teams in baseball of the last 5 years, I want to talk about this Mason Miller dude. This dude's a freak. I know the A's are going to try him as a starter at some point again. Please don't. What he does in the ninth inning, like maybe I just have UCL injury fatigue and I'm just tired of seeing so-and-so hits on the shelf with UCL damage or elbow strain or flexor strain or whatever it is. And, you know, I know it doesn't absolve him from injury risk pitching only one inning, especially because he's max effort throwing 103 miles an hour. But watching him obliterate the heart of the order in the ninth inning religiously, it just does it for me, man. Like, it really does. I love watching that dude pitch. And I know the A's don't get to nail down a lot of games, although they did take 2 of 3 from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And the White Sox swept the Rays, sidebar, which is hilarious. Benintendi might be back, but probably isn't. Mason Miller is a waiver wire. Mason Miller is a freak. Brian, I know you've been every time he pitches, you mention it in our group chat. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Mason Miller?
I mean, I don't mean to steal anybody's thunder from any other podcast that might think that he's amazing. But no, I think it's great, but it's the kind of thing where it's he burns bright, you know. It's the reason that he's a reliever right now is because he was continually getting hurt. And now everything is kind of coming together right now for a team that no one's barely watching. And I think that first Red Sox series, even the casual fan who was at a bar, they're like, who the hell is this guy? I mean, I think does he lead the league or he's right up there and pitches thrown over 100 miles an hour?
Oh, and he's got more than like half the organizations combined.
At total Major League Baseball and his starters, like he throws. Yeah. I think he averages like 100. What's the baseball savant, like 101 miles an hour average or something crazy? And then his slider is 92 or something. And I don't even know if he has a third pitch, which is like, oh, he's Tanner Hawk because he can only throw 2 pitches. If he ever throws a split finger, oh my God, he's going to be, you know, in the Hall of Fame. But I mean, he's lights out as far as a relief pitcher. But he's doing it and no one's seeing it. And the fact that we're talking about it now, everyone's seeing it, but it's a much bigger deal because he's the kind of guy, like if the Red Sox had him as a closer, you'd get excited, you know, you'd want, you know, it'd be must-see TV. And now it kind of is, if you're able to see these A's games somehow, I think they're on like, they're on black and white television, I think, on Telemundo right now. I think that's a television deal. But I mean, if you get a chance to see this guy pitch, it's amazing.
He's averaging 100.7 miles an hour on his four-seam.
Yeah, nuts. Nuts. Nuts.
This is the baseball savant for Mason Miller is the real red wave that we were promised.
It looks like the Midwest right now on his baseball savant. This is the red all across the board.
The dude's a freak. What do you think, Sam?
Obviously, he's excellent, and there's a million things you could say that are really, really positive about him. It's so frustrating to me for the people, the fans of Oakland, that in a year are not going to be paying attention to him. He's going to move to, what is it, San Francisco? I don't even remember.
Sacramento.
A known baseball town, Sacramento. Yeah. I mean, it's so utterly ridiculous. It's so absurd that MLB put up with this cash grab. It's, as a baseball fan, it is more disappointing to me than it is exciting to watch Mason Miller pitch because I know that the millions of Oakland fans will just – I mean, you're going to lose the vast majority of them, and it's so frustrating. I still cannot believe that MLB allowed that cash grab. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it in the NHL too with the Coyotes, and like there was this whole issue with extending the lease where the Coyotes played. Nobody pays attention to the Coyotes, so I don't remember the name of their old arena, but it's like very similar because the Coyotes moved to the ASU new arena and it was like 5,000 got seated. So it's like, oh, playoff atmosphere, but there's like, it's like a sixth of what you get at like an actual NHL arena. That's going to be similar to what you get from the A's next year. Cause they're in a minor league stadium. So like, yeah, I'm sure from a percentage of seats filled, it'll be much higher. And they'll be like, see, look, we had to move because the A's are such manipulative assholes. I blanked on the owner's name, so I just said the A's.
Jordan, did they ever talk about them just playing where the Giants play? Like every other Major League Baseball team in the history of planet Earth always did until a new stadium was built where like, you know, the Dodgers would play at the Polo Grounds or what, like that was like a thing. I mean, I know I'm talking a million years ago, but I mean, that's what teams used to do. You'd play at another major league caliber park when I don't know, they're on the road. So the vendors like it because they're making not 81 times million hot dogs. They're making 162. you know, a lot of these places aren't multi-venues like we have in Boston. Like, I don't think like the Rolling Stones are playing like all these major league parks like they do here, or, you know, comedians. Bill Burr doesn't play, you know, the San Francisco Giants Stadium. Like, you know, the owners can make a lot of money by having a team like that. And I know the Oakland A's aren't a big draw, but you could probably make a few bucks if they played in Giants, where, you know, Golden State went across the bay to San Francisco. So, and it's a real small area. I mean, I'm overgeneralizing, but really it's like, we have the Charles River, we got Cambridge and Boston. If you've ever been to San Francisco, that's what San Francisco, Oakland is. It's really San Francisco on one side, Oakland's on the other. They couldn't work something out. There's really no reason for them to go to Sacramento. It makes absolutely zero sense.
I would have to imagine they did talk about it, but maybe I'm giving them too much credit.
Probably, yeah. I mean, they're a bunch of jackasses. Yeah.
I'm likely am. Yeah, they were just trying to do anything in their power to get out of Oakland and then eventually to Las Vegas. And yeah, like you said, Sam, it is a very gut-wrenching feeling for Oakland A's fans, because they can't even enjoy the fact that their team is not horrible. Like, they're competing in a lot of these games. I mean, one of the games they lost to the Red Sox was a game Mason Miller pitched, went 12 innings, and they had the lead in the ninth inning. They've been a very competitive squad. I remember a couple weeks ago when Brian and I were recording, I was like, yo, are the A's not horrible? Because they're like 7-9. And they were, I mean, the Astros are an absolute laughingstock. They're what I thought the A's would be this season.
I'm really heartbroken about that, Jordan. And not to cut you off, but I'm really upset that the Astros are not doing well. It really, it's personal. It's just like, I really wish they could play better. I just, you know, just had to acknowledge that.
I thought Correa ate up the villain character very well. And once he left, I'm like, yeah, no, I have no emotional ties to the Astros at all. So I'm totally cool with them being horrible. I mostly did it because the Red Sox were bad and I wanted to be an instigator, and now Correa's gone, so I can't do that.
One other thing that I wanted to mention about Mason Miller. Have you guys seen what his FIP is?
No, I actually haven't, but I am looking at his expected ERA, and it's hilarious how
it's I assume it has to do with his FIP. His FIP is currently 0.08. He is almost bordering into the negatives, which is something I only thought would be possible in Road to the Show. I mean, it is utterly ridiculous how dominant he has been. He really is one of the best relievers in baseball.
I shorted him a little bit too. I gave him, he was 100.7 miles an hour on StatCast. I'm assuming that is all fastballs slash like undefined fastballs, like sinkers or anything like that. On FanGraphs, it says his average fastball velocity is 101.2 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Yeah. So 1.46 ERA. He is striking out 52.1% of batters. And like Edwin Diaz did that a couple years ago, where he was striking out, it felt like everybody. That was kind of when the narco song kind of took over and everybody was blasting that. I do it now when Chase Anderson comes into the game. But Mason Miller has a strikeout to walk rate of 43.7%. This man, oh my God. Like, there's nothing about him. Like, I'm looking for one thing about him that's not good. Like, I'm just trying to find one thing to hate on. And it might just be the fact he's an Oakland A. Like, that's literally the only thing negative about him. Like, he's striking out, like I said, 18.2 guys per nine innings. He's pitched 12 innings and he's already accumulated one win above replacement. He's an animal, man. I need this man to get the hell out of the A's organization. He will be an Atlanta Brave before the end of the 2027 season. Like,
but they can sell high on him, though, Jordan, like you wouldn't believe, right? Isn't some idiot GM going to, like, give, like, way too much and then watch, he blows his arm out? It's going to happen. You know it's going to happen.
Who is the highest-rated Red Sox prospect you would trade one-for-one for Mason Miller? I'm gonna do what Sam did. I'm gonna put y'all on the spot. I don't have one in mind, but I genuinely think I would trade a top 10 Red Sox prospect for him one for one. Maybe let me pull up the list real quick, just so I don't say somebody that's outside the top 10. Would you trade? I mean, Willier's still listed at 7. I don't think I would trade Willier for him, just because he's proven he can hack it at the major league level.
How about Paralis or Gonzalez?
I would definitely trade one of them for Mason Miller for sure. I'd trade both of them for Mason Miller, I think.
Okay.
I think Perales in relief could look, he has a very similar like velocity profile. He, at least not, obviously not quite that. Wickelman, I might consider. Nick York would be the like easy yes, and anyone below that would be like mostly easy yes. But Perales, I'm not 100% sure on.
It's going to have to hurt. You're not going to, you know, like Nick York. Yeah, I'd love to do New York too, you know? And it's like, oh, that'd be fantastic. But there's a reason we're excited to get rid of New York too, because they'd be like, no way in hell are we taking him. But to get something, it has to like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this deal. You know, I remember when they got Sale, I used to go to Portland and watch Mankata, and I'm like, you can't get rid of this guy. This guy's amazing. And then it was like, well, we got rid of Mankata, but we kept Benintendi. I mean, I guess in the end, it really didn't matter. But at the time, it was kind of like, I mean, you'd take the train, or I used to drive up to Portland to watch those two guys hit. And it was just like, light bulbs are going off. And it felt like you're at like a major league game going to a double A game. Those guys were just studs in the minors. It's going to have to hurt a little bit. I don't think they'll do anything. I don't think they'll do it, but bet you he's going to go to like the Mets, or I could see like the Braves or the Dodgers, or somebody's going to overpay, or it's going to be a desert team at the, like if the Astros pull the head out of their ass, maybe like they might grab a guy like that, or maybe even like the Rangers, you know, depending on, but I guess they're like cheap now. So I don't know. I mean, but some team who is maybe overachieving, who's like right there, would maybe grab them at the deadline, but that's when you overpay. And that's good for them, because then they'll get, you know, they'll get something out of it. So it's a win-win for everybody, even though their ownership's a bunch of dinks.
What might actually be kind of interesting is another AL West team. I know interdivision trades are kind of weird, but I think the Mariners would actually be a really interesting fit because they have the farm system for it, and they kind of have the need for it. I know he's not quite Andrés Muñoz, but they don't have the like most dissimilar profiles, but I don't think it matters. Like 101 fastball is going
to
be 100.
I'd like to see, I mean, I hate to say it because I wish that they didn't get a new owner, but now that the Orioles have a new owner, they're like going to be the Braves 2.0. If he went to the Braves, and I mean, not that Kimbrel isn't a nice person, but I mean, if they got the guy from the Oakland as their closer, that's really the missing piece for the Braves Orioles right now.
Yeah, especially after watching Craig Kimbrel lose to Mason Miller's Oakland A's 2 out of 3. I mean, the A's aren't going to trade Mason Miller, and they won't until it's almost too late to do so, because that's what the A's do. They're not a smart organization, which is crazy because, you know, growing up, they were like the pinnacle of like an analytically run team that that's just super cheap, but they make a lot of the right decisions. They trade guys right at the peak value. Mm-hmm. They almost did with Donaldson. Then he happened to win MVP in 2015. If they waited one more year, maybe they could have gotten more. But yeah, I mean, they're not going to trade him, but I do think it'd be a very fascinating discussion to have with Craig Breslow off the record and be like, all right, top prospect, you'd be willing to give up one for one for Mason Miller. Obviously, nobody would ever find out the answer because it's off the record, but I would love to find out
Reddit.
Yeah, let's find him.
Take him to the Yale Skulls party, you know, for the reunion, and get him a little bit of Jägermeister, and the truth will come out. That's what I heard off the record. That's what I heard.
Be like, hey, man, Miguel Blaze, would you trade him for just start naming names and see if he says yes to him? Be like, would you trade Miguel Blaze for Mason Miller? I wouldn't, but you know, that's. A lot can be said about the fact that dude is as lethal as he is. But it is one inning. Ultimately, you have to remember that it is just one inning, and for one of the worst teams in baseball. Anyway, for the last, you know, game starts in about 20 minutes. So we'll wrap it up here, maybe 10 minutes or so. And we'll talk about tonight's matchup. We kind of alluded to it a little bit, mentioned it a couple of times, you know, Tanner Houck going against Hayden Wesneski. Sox going for the series win on Sunday Night Baseball standalone game. Is this their first one of the season?
I think so. This is the first time we've had to do something like this. I mean, not to get off topic, Jordan, but I know when I wasn't able to do the game, I blamed the comedian that I went to see, Matt Rife.
He
liked the tweet, so I thought that was kind of funny. That was probably not him. It's probably his PR guy. But he was like, I'm like, hey, sorry, you know, I can't do the podcast. You know, it's Matt Rife's fault. And then he liked it like 10 seconds after. I was like, yeah, it's probably him. And my wife is probably like, no, it's probably just somebody who works for him. Okay, you're not that cool. But I thought that was kind of nice.
I have the same feeling every time Luke Combs likes one of my tweets. Like, oh, awesome. Wait, probably not him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Luke Combs knows who I am, you know, in theory, but yeah, so theoretically speaking. But yeah, so tonight Red Sox looking to improve to 16-13 on the season. Cubs, I thought they were going to be good this year. I was shocked when I saw their record coming into the series. I didn't think they were as good as they have been, I guess mostly because I'd only been paying attention to Imanaga. But yeah, I mean, what do you guys think we'll see tonight? There's obviously no Bellinger because he also has a fractured rib, so he's out for a bit. We haven't seen him in the series, but Morel kind of had an awkward fall yesterday too. So that's something to monitor from the Cubs side of things. But yeah, what do you guys think we'll see tonight? Brian, you got anything?
I think it's the rookie pitchers can go one of two ways. I've had the chance to talk to guys who played Major League Baseball in the past, and they said the guys you have a book on are easier to hit. Guys you've never seen are the hardest to hit because you have no idea what they're going to throw. And it's really up to, you know, is the guy going to shit his pants and is he going to be able to throw strikes? If he actually, you know, can like focus on, you know, and actually, you know, just play catch with his catcher and not, you know, try and pitch to, you know, the other team's weaknesses, but his strengths, like all meathead pitchers do, he'll be okay. It's that second or third time through the lineup. If you don't have that third pitch, then they'll get hammered. So, you know, they can't open a book and go, well, all right, in AAA he did this and blah, blah, blah. But it's the guys who've been around 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you're going to hit better. You know, I hate, not that he's a great guy, but like Pete Rose will tell you that. Ted Williams used to say that all the guys are like the guys you see repeatedly, you can hit better. Rookies, they give teams a hard time because you have no idea what's going to happen. So he's going to do fantastic or they're going to blow him out early. And I know that's like a both sides of the coin answer, but that's kind of how I feel.
What do you think, Sam?
I really, it's so hard to get a gauge on him, especially looking at his Baseball Savant page, because he's thrown like maybe 150 pitches this year. And it's like, he currently throws the sweeper the most, and then he got like a four seam and sinker. It looks like the type of profile, and it looks like the type of positioning on his pitches, like where Tyler O'Neill would also definitely have a home run. But I think that Yoshida actually might, looking at these pitches, like Yoshida actually might have a home run here.
I'm leaning
more like a couple early home runs and getting him out relatively early. But now that I say that, he's going to go six scoreless.
Yeah.
Who was the pitcher that I did this for a couple weeks ago where I was like, the Red Sox are going to get, oh no, it was Joe Boyle and he sucked. So, never mind. But, yeah, I think Wes Neske is going to be a very good pitcher at the major league level. Has been very solid so far, albeit in six innings. Was really good in a cup of coffee for the Cubs in 2022, was not good for them last year. I think he's a good pitcher. Again, like Brian said, it could go one of two ways tonight. He's either going to dazzle. I mean, mind you, again, he's only pitched on average three innings in appearance, so it might be a bullpen game for them. I mean, it was supposed to be Jordan Wicks, but he has elbow fatigue, or was it elbow discomfort? It was something with his elbow because everything is an elbow now. So Wes Neske on short notice-ish. I mean, found out yesterday, but I think the Red Sox are going to take this game. I think it might be similar fashion to what it looked like when Cutter started for Hauk. I think he's just due for a game, and maybe the Angels game was the game that he just wasn't going to be himself. But I think after the run he's had the last two times out, he's going to have a game where he goes like five, allows three, and it's not his best stuff. The Cubs are a good team. Nico Horner's a pest of face. Dansby Swanson's got some pop. If Morel, I haven't checked the lineup actually. I don't know if Morel is in there tonight, but he, like I said, he did kind of have an awkward spill yesterday. So who knows, but he's got pop. I do think this is going to be a game where I don't think Hauk is allowed a home run this season. He did to Taylor Ward against the Angels, but I do think we're going to see somebody touch him up tonight. I'm not going to predict who. I've already, you know, dug a hole too deep for myself with Yoshida going yard, but I don't think it's going to be the prettiest Tanner Houck outing, but I do think he's going to pitch well enough. The Red Sox will get to either Wes Neske early in his limited action, because I don't think he'll go deep, or they'll get to the bullpen. I got a final score prediction. I got Red Sox 6, Cubs 4. That's going to be my prediction for the night. And again, I'm going to beat the dead horse. Yoshida is going yard tonight. It's going to happen. So place your bets, and remember, it's not my fault if it doesn't happen. Do not come knocking on my door. I will call the police. So anyway, Yeah, y'all got any final score predictions before I put my foot further in my mouth?
Yeah, that sounds right. 6-4. I'll go with it. I'll second that. I'll bet the mortgage on it. You know, I don't have any responsibilities like a wife or children, Jordan. So nothing to worry about, Jordan. It's all right. You know,
if I don't wake up tomorrow, I'm gonna know that Brian killed me. Anyway, go
ahead. I'll change it up a little. I'll go 7-2 Sox.
Ooh, nice little convincing victory. I love that. And remember, Sam also said Yoshida was going yard. So I just deflect a little bit of blame if it doesn't happen. But anyway, that'll do it for this edition of the Pesky Report presented by Beyond the Monster. Feel free to like, subscribe on wherever you view us, whether it be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Twitch. Follow us on Twitter at Pesky Report, etc. Let us know we suck. Let us know you love us. Whichever your opinion is, it really means a lot. Constructive criticism is always good. And being praised is always fun, too. We love dopamine here. But anyway, for everybody else, I'm Jordan. We'll see you guys next time. And hold on, I suck. Anyway, peace out.